Spoken word.
A taste of Melbourne's diverse poetry scene.
Poets using their voices to entertain, to move, to take you on a journey.
Connecting you to grassroots poetry and performance.
Welcome to 3CR Spoken Word Show. My name is Indrani Pereira, and I'm broadcasting from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, stolen land. We pay our respects to elders past and present. Always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Spoken word and poetry come from the heart and touch all the topics peculiar to the human condition. As such, there may be content in this show that could cause distress. Please practice self-care when listening and speak to someone if you need to. For the next half an hour, I'm going to be interviewing poet Lynette Natasha. Lynette Natasha is a poet and writer whose work explores relationships with family, others, ourselves and the world. Born in Malaysia to a bicultural family and currently living in Naarm, Melbourne, her poems are shaped by the act of living between worlds. How do we become who we are while holding on to traditions? How do we live with so much beauty and brutality? And how do we balance grief with the gloriousness of living? Welcome to the show, Lynette Natasha.
Thank you for having me, Indrani.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to have you here. And it's such a beautiful day out there, which is lovely for spring.
Yes, good time for meandering, thinking and writing.
Have you been writing a lot lately?
I've been reading more than I've been writing recently, just really devouring a lot of poetry.
When you say you've been reading and devouring a lot of poetry, is there a poet in particular who you're really feasting on at the moment?
Not one in particular. I am reading like a collection of poetry. So I subscribe to a poetry magazine. So there's always stacks and stacks and stacks of books just waiting to be read.
Oh, wow. So what's the magazine that you subscribe to?
So it's the Poetry Magazine by the Poetry Foundation.
Is that the American one?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I read their poems online and I've got their email that I get.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yes, they publish amazing poetry.
Yeah, and what I find with reading across so many different months now of the subscription is really not just learning about different works and different ways of writing, but just so many different topics that, you know, I've never thought about exploring or perspectives I never had, being introduced into those worlds. It's lovely.
Yeah, wow. Is there anything in particular that stands out as something you've gone, oh, I would never have written about that or thought in that way?
Lots. The first one that comes to mind, and it's a poem that's also a recipe and also talking about her relationship with her father. I think the ability to merge different themes and worlds and bring it together, it's just, I think it's really beautiful. And also as a lover of food, the recipe bit really, really got me.
Yeah, that sounds really intriguing. I also like food. Did you find, like in the poem, does the poet specifically say, you know, take 2 tablespoons of oil? And
from what I remember, it's a description of this dish that her dad used to make and how he would source these ingredients. Yeah, and it was an act of love in his way. Mm. And I think it just reminded me a lot of my family and my traditions and how people show love in my culture as well. So yes, that resonated.
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned in your bio that you're from a bicultural family, which I thought was really intriguing.
Yeah, my dad is... So I grew up in Malaysia. My dad is Punjabi. My mom is Chinese. And so this act of living between worlds, I think, has been a long echo of my life. And then, you know, as I grow up and I find myself, you know, now just even living in Australia as like a woman of color in a primarily white society, I'd say. Yeah, then there's like this new duality. So there's so many like layers of it. And then I used to, I guess, want to have this time in my life where it all came together, where I wasn't, you know, straddling so many things anymore. But I learned that maybe that's not possible, and maybe the act of living between two worlds and having two things exist at the same time is actually the beauty and the difficulty of it all.
I have that bicultural experience as well with Sri Lankan and German in my heritage. And I have a similar feeling that, you know, that sense of wanting to belong and find people like me, and like, it's not going to happen because I think that combination, there's probably someone out there, Sri Lankan German, but I may never get to meet them.
Yeah.
And so I started thinking about, instead of not being able to exist in either world, more like you get the chance to bridge worlds.
Yes. Yes, to bridge worlds. Yes.
Yeah. Which is nice. And then you can kind of move between two, which not everyone gets to do, which is also, I feel like, a blessing.
Yes. In preparation for today and, you know, thinking about this theme a bit more, it actually reminded me of a piece I read quite long ago, but really stuck with me. And it's by Chris Abani, who's an author who wrote The Face Cartography of the Void, and also comes from two different backgrounds. So Chris Abani, his mother was a white English woman and his father Igbo, and I hope I'm saying that right. But in this book that he wrote, and I'm just going to read from it. So he talks about, most of the confusion about who I am is a product of how my face is read. Thus, it is perceived to be where it is taught to belong and how it is supposed to look. As my father used to say in the heavy Igbo accent he would adopt when particularly disgusted by some new facet of my rebellion, you're just a disappointment. Even my grandfather, who cast kola nuts when I was born and who nicknamed me Irusi, spirit, would shake his head and say, you don't belong here or in the land or the spirits. You are a bat, neither bird nor mammal. I love that. That meant I could be anything, even Batman.
Oh, the ending. I didn't see that coming.
Yeah. And when I read that, I was like, oh, someone who gets it, who takes the strength in non-belonging. Mm. And I'm using air quotes here. Yeah. And then creating something new. I don't belong in either worlds. Therefore, I get to create this new thing that I can be, which is... yeah, rare.
Yes, and be a superhero as well.
Yeah.
Yes, which is awesome. Who doesn't want to be a superhero?
Yeah.
I'm wondering, do you have any poems you can share with us that kind of bounce off any of the things we've just been talking about?
Yeah, yes, I do.
Great. We'd love to hear it, I'm sure. All the listeners out there are saying yes. Please give us a poem.
So this is Father. Father. I tell you it's okay if you don't believe in me as long as I believe in myself. You don't respond. There is so much unspoken between us, and I wonder if it's me who refuses to speak or you who refuses to listen. Maybe it's us both forever in this dance between father and friend, never knowing where or how to land. Do you remember when you asked a person who loved me if I thought you were a bad person? I never asked them what they said. I wonder if we'll spend our whole lives speaking through others and gestures that are meant to say, I love you. Always reading between the phone calls, plates of food, routine questions of housework, anything new. The long silent drives that feel as if they could go in any direction. A crash of perspectives or private stories tailgating each other, our attempt at moving forward. Do you remember that trick you did? When little me would stand on your feet, hand in yours secure. You raised me up like it was the greatest joy in the world, and I believed. Where has it gone? Do you remember the pressure cooker whistling in the kitchen, my footsteps making their way to you, how you'd scoop me up, hold me close as you picked the perfect piece of tender mutton? You asked me if it was good enough, as if you needed to hear from me. And I, just a girl, just a daughter content to be in the moment, would always say yes. Of course it's good enough. This has to be.
I love that theme of, is it good enough going through? Are you good enough? He's wondering if he's good enough, your father. Is the food good enough? You know, and all through there is the food and the mutton and the love.
Yeah, which ties back to why I resonated so much with the poem we talked about earlier. Yeah, and I think there's always this tension, I guess, of coming back to these two worlds of, you know, who I am as my father's daughter and who I am now, and then all these questions that are left kind of lingering in between that we try to have, sometimes unsuccessfully, and then when it is successful, it's just like, ah, what a relief. You know, and I think the recognition of parents as people too, and I think that poem was, what that poem was trying to do was kind of exploring that relationship of, yeah, not good enoughness, and also this has to be good enough because it's all we have.
Yes, it's a very, very beautiful poem, and I really got a sense of your father and you and your relationship with the way that you wrote. Your lines were very powerful. There was one in particular about tailgating each other, I think you said,
yeah,
which I really liked. I thought that was great.
Yeah, it actually came off a conversation we were having while he was driving. I was in the back seat and my mum was in the front seat, and you know, we were discussing different topics, family and politics and, you know, marriage and all these kind of things. And I really wouldn't know where we'd go because our perspectives can be so different. But it was one topic after another and another and another. But we just kept going. And I just was interested in two things, I guess, hearing him and also being heard.
That's really powerful, isn't it? And I think that's what most of us have in conversations, is that duality of the being heard and the hearing.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, being your mother's daughter, is that a similar experience or a different experience?
I'd say it's a different experience. I think they are quite different people, and therefore the relationship with them is quite different.
So I'm wondering, do you have another poem? I feel like, yeah, I'm in the mood for poetry today.
Okay, cool. Let's,
yeah.
Again, going back to, I guess, family, and this one hints a bit to, I guess, again, the conversations that we do and don't have. And yeah, maybe introduces a bit of my mum to the world. Silence. My mother fusses over me the minute I wake up. Morning, coffee, water, tea, breakfast. I want to retreat. Silence, please. Morning, coffee, did you sleep well? Or would you like to eat? Silence, please. My dad talks to me about politics, housing, my relationship, rarely his. I sit awkwardly and anxiously around them. Silence. This is how they know to love. My mother fusses, my father dances around the subject. I want to tell them everything and fear I will never be heard. This is how they love. Always awkward, always anxious. Over coffee, tea, breakfast, housing, politics. I fear what needs to be said will never be spoken.
Oh, that ending, it just came really fast and took me by surprise. I was just caught up in your mother's voice, which I think you brought to us so powerfully. Like the rhythm, it was really fast, and just the questions coming in, you're just like, oh, I've just woken up. Can I just have some quiet, please?
Yeah, and I think that's a good depiction of her. The way she cares is through fussing and, you know, growing up around it. I'm like, oh my gosh, mom, stop. And now, whenever I feel like I need like a deep care that I've known all my life, I just want my mom to fuss over me. I just want her to like cut me fruits and ask me if I have enough water to drink, or, you know, if I'm hungry 10 times a day. So yeah, I do miss that.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? At the time it annoys you like crazy, and then when you don't have it, you're like, oh, I just need it.
I just kind of need it. And then 5 minutes later, you're like, okay, thanks.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, that's very true.
3CR is about community, and we welcome your participation at the station.
3CR is open to a wide diversity of volunteers and is a great way to connect with Melbourne's activist community. Have you ever thought about volunteering, doing a reception shift, getting a program on air,
training in radio skills, or contributing to one of the station's committees?
There are many ways to be involved at 3CR.
To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au and get in touch.
You're listening to 3CR's Spoken Word Show. I'm Indrani Pereira, and I'm interviewing the poet Lynette Natasha. Before the break, you heard Lynette Natasha with her poem Silence. And I'm wondering, Lynette Natasha, when you started writing poetry, what was it about the form that drew you in?
Oh, great question. I'd say I started listening to a lot of spoken word poetry, so like the musicality of it, but also the vulnerability in a lot of the poems and people being, and then metaphors, you know, some of my favorite things. So yeah, watching some of these incredible spoken word poets just get up on stage and be able to talk about these, you know, themes and topics that are really important to them and string those words together in such a often powerful performance. Yeah, incredible.
So was it from a place of admiration that you started writing poetry thinking, yes, I want to do that?
I have to say, I don't even know where or how I began. We wrote poetry in school, and I guess all my life I've loved writing, and I probably was writing poetry before I knew I was writing poetry. And then the first time I kind of put something out there, I knew the form was a poem, but I didn't really register in my head that I was, you know, writing poetry and making poetry until, you know, someone named it and they're like, oh, that's a poem about your grandma. And I'm like, yeah, it is. It is a poem about my grandma. And so, yes, the first poem I ever wrote and put out there in the world was a poem about my grandmother, who is a very special person to me. And yeah, I think in every space I just love bringing her up and talking about how wonderful she is. Yeah.
So she's had a big influence on you?
Yes. Yes, she has. She was one of the caretakers, you know, who was in my life as I was growing up. And I had a really good, you know, relationship, and I felt very loved and safe in her presence. And she was just there for me for a lot of my childhood.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, and I think grandmas are, you know, if and when you're fortunate enough, often that character in your life.
There's something about being a grandmother, I feel. I'm not a grandmother, but, you know, they get to spoil you. They don't have to worry so much about the discipline. They did that, so this is their chance to just enjoy kids and, you know, give you the ice cream and say, don't tell your parents.
Yeah, and also she was a great cook. And often just, I would watch her cook all these meals in the kitchen just by her side. And she was just this presence of comfort and this like quiet beauty. And yeah.
She sounds amazing. And there's something about kitchens, isn't there? Like the smells, they bring back so many memories, and the food, it's just so nourishing.
Yeah. And everything she made, as simple as it was, I try and replicate it and I'm like, it's just not the same.
Yeah, there's something about food that's cooked for you by someone else and cooked with love.
Yes, 10 times better.
Yeah, yeah, it's not the same. Yeah, you can never replicate it.
No.
Yes. So you're talking about food and it's making me really hungry, I have to say, right now. And I'm wondering, do you write about food? You did before. Is it a theme that goes through your poetry, writing about food?
Not intentionally. I think, you know, I write about what I know about, and sometimes food comes into it. And I guess because it's very ingrained in my culture. And yeah, like I said, it's really one of the love languages, you know. We've got 6 and the additional one is eat, basically.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think that's how it gets weaved into a lot of the work that I do.
Yeah. And with the food going through, so is there something that inspires you to write? So food is in your poetry, but is there something in particular that sends you to the page and gets you to write things, you know, get out the pen and paper or your computer or whatever it is?
In general?
Yeah.
Yeah, I often have, I'm going to say, I just take all my feelings and then I need to write them down. So whether it's journaling or poetry, and I kind of keep them in the back of my head. And then as I'm walking through, you know, everyday life and I see something that kind of connects and I'm like, oh, there's a poem in there. Or, you know, I've made some notes on my phone and then I go back to it and I'm like, okay, just like sit with it and what could this be? And it may be just 5 lines, and sometimes it kind of writes itself in a really long form. Yeah, so I'd say just what inspires me is really just living through life and paying attention to the world and then kind of merging the insides and the outsides and creating something with words.
That sounds magic. So when you talk about merging the insides and outsides, are you talking about merging your own interior, internal experience with the outside things that you're observing?
Yeah, yes. So, you know, how I think about, you know, in autumn, how the trees are just standing there and, you know, quite barren and they're waiting for something new. And I think about the times in my life and if that's a season for me where I'm just waiting for something to come, and maybe it's forgiveness from someone who's gone. And, you know, sometimes it's just, and then I look at the tree and I look at myself and I'm like, oh, we're just 2 beings kind of standing here waiting for this thing to arrive. And then there's a poem.
Oh, yeah, that sounds so poetical. You just, I'm in my head, I can see you and the tree standing there waiting. Yeah.
I know exactly which tree I'm looking at when I think about that in my head.
Yeah, that's amazing. Did you write about that tree? Have you got a poem about the tree at all that you'd like to share?
Yes, I can do that. This is called New Leaf. All things end. The trees stand naked and lonely, abandoned by the leaves it once held on its limbs. It's all gone now and everything feels too cold. I am trying desperately to hold on in the only ways I know. I repeat your name, hoping you're somewhere listening for it. I am trying to keep you alive. Like the trees, I am holding out for something that isn't there. You're not coming back, even though I want this to be some joke. Maybe like the leaves, I'll change, accept the nature of things. If I wait patiently enough, maybe forgiveness will come.
You have an incredible way of ending a poem, and every time it sneaks up on me, I feel like there's more coming, and then it's bam, and it's there, and it just hits me. It's just, it's incredible.
Thank you.
There's a real skill, I think, in ending a poem and having it really powerful, and I think you do that really well.
Aw, thank you. Huge compliment. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And I'm wondering, do you find that easy to do? Is it something that comes like naturally and you're just like, I know how this is going to end? Or do you have to work at it?
It's definitely editing. So, you know, the first draft and then, yeah, rewriting. Sometimes it just arrives and I'm like, this is my lucky day. And how do I make it, you know, really like sharp and punchy? And often, and it has been pointed out to me as well, but often the, I guess, flow or format of my poems either have this, you know, cynicism to it, and then it's like, oh, ending on a note of hope, or there's this like, oh, beauty and everything, and then it's like, haha, you know, like life's also difficult and painful and full of grief. So again, I guess comes back to that duality, which I've learned now to sort of live with and accept as just reality.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. And I feel too, when you were talking about it, duality wasn't the word I had in my head. I was more thinking like you're flipping it and you're like turning the tables on the listener. So you're taking us along and then boom, you know, you're taking this in a different direction. You've switched paths.
Yeah, and I do enjoy doing that. I love the, I think that's what I admire and appreciate in a lot of the poetry I read as well. It's like, oh, where am I going? And the fact that language has the ability to do that, to take you on this journey, and you think, oh, I'm in someone's kitchen, oh, I'm meeting someone's grandma, you know, and then it's like, oof, the feeling kind of sets in and you're like, oh my God, that's powerful to me.
It is. And I like how you're talking about reading a poem's going on a journey, because you don't know where the poet's going to take you. You don't know what you'll see along the way and where you're headed. You just have to have complete trust.
Yeah.
And do you find that powerful to then also be, because you said at the start that you read a lot of poetry and have been reading a lot of poetry. Do you also find it powerful to be in the writing seat and get to be, I guess, the driver of the poem?
I find that, I think powerful isn't the word I would use in, you know, in those instances. It really is the most alive. That's when I feel most alive, when I'm in a workshop or when I'm writing poetry, when I just have like hours and there's papers all over the floor and my notebook scribbled 10 times over. It's like this level of aliveness that I don't feel anywhere else. And I think that's what keeps me so connected to poetry and like so in love with it. It's just this level of aliveness that nothing else can give me. And then, you know, performing and reading it is another thing where I'm like, please don't perceive me. But in the moment, the making of it is, yeah, just filled with aliveness, which I love.
It sounds amazing. You're making me want to go and write.
Oh, yes, everybody go and write.
Yes. But please, if you're driving, just pull over first.
Yes.
You said an interesting thing just then about then you get to read it or perform it, and you said, please don't perceive me.
Yes.
Did you want to talk about that at all?
No. Okay. I'm kidding. I think like, you know, in this room between us, I feel, you know, pretty okay. There's no other eyes kind of watching me. But, you know, often at like an open mic or in a room with other poets, yeah, the fear of, you know, being perceived in a certain way. And I think a lot of the poems that I write are very close to my heart. They're about family and loss and grief and how I view the world, which, you know, sometimes I find can be quite a lonely place if, you know, the perception is that, oh, I wonder if other people feel this way. And then when you put it out there, you do get people who say, oh my gosh, I do feel that way, which is a beautiful relief. But also I'm like, ah, yeah, now you know me. And the fear of being known is, you know, I think it's quite double-edged. Like, we want to be known, but it's also quite scary to be known. So I think that's my fear of, you know, that being perceived and, yeah, just strangers kind of going, oh, that's who she is. And, yeah, I don't know if anyone else feels this way.
No, it's interesting because I feel like when you're performing poetry, you are really seen. People are actually listening to what you're saying. It is quite confronting.
Yes. And I think, you know, and when I start thinking that way, what I often do is tell myself that, you know, this is, yes, this is my work, but in this space, it's not about me. And, you know, to kind of park my, you know, ego at the door and just like any piece of art that you'd see in a museum, what you take from it really is, you know, a part of yourself, what you see in it. And, you know, sometimes people will hear themselves rather than hear you. And I think that's a gift. You know, if someone walks away with something, you know, and I often have been in those spaces, or when I've read something and rather, you know, I've read the poem, but I've also heard myself in it and taken something away from it. So, you know, if that's what people get from it, then yeah, I think that's quite lovely.
So I'm wondering, when you're sharing poetry, is it because you're wanting to connect with people? And so that feeling of, oh, yes, someone else has had this experience, so it's less lonely?
That is a great question. I'm thinking about now, like, why do I share my poetry? And yeah, I guess it is to connect with others. And I think often as well to, you know, feel a sense of bravery that I've made this thing, and oh, I wonder what it would be like for other people, how it would land in a world outside my head, and to kind of test that. But yeah, if I think about why I go to poetry events, it is, you know, to connect and to hear and to see what's out there. So yes, I think any sharing of work is a way for us to connect with others. Yeah, with a piece of ourselves that often is quite vulnerable and scary.
And I feel like it's such a brave act to share work, especially something like poetry that's quite close to your heart. And it's also very generous at the same time.
I hope it is.
I think so. It's that power of vulnerability, I think, that Brené Brown talks about, you know. There's strength in that being vulnerable.
I think one of the most beautiful, like, receptions of when someone receives a poem and then, you know, say comes up to me later and go like, oh my gosh, the thing you talked about with your grandma or about your dad, we were just talking about that the other day with my friends and, you know, family and those kind of things. And I guess for other people to kind of go, oh, me too. Yeah, if we can all, I think if the work can produce that feeling of like, I'm not alone in this, and I, you know, other people out there feel this way too, then yeah, I guess it is to connect, because it makes someone feel less alone in who they are.
That's a lovely way to put it. Do you have one more poem? I think we can squeeze one more in.
I would love to read a poem about my grandma. This is called Photograph. In the photograph, my brother is leaning over a coffee table. My mother is blowing out the candles on her cake. She is 40. I am 6. In the left-hand corner, you are holding me, squeezing me tight with a smile across your face. You are wearing an outfit you'd sewn flowers all over. You are where good things grow. I am mid-clap. We must have been singing. The tiny TV in the background plays a Hong Kong cop drama. There is an orange telephone sitting on a phone book waiting to be rung. I remember, ever since I was a kid, you took my name and made it your own. Ninette. That's who I was to you. And every time I peered through the back door, you welcomed me, always asking in your native tongue, Sit Bala. Not, are you hungry, but are you full? Are you satisfied? Is there space for more in this life? One more meal together around the table where the lazy Susan spins tirelessly, carrying the love you'd put on plates. There is so much of childhood that does not beg a return, but there are times I wish I could dive into that photograph, feel your arms wrap around me again, hear you say my name the only way you do. Ninette, forever held in that embrace, I want to remember us this way.
Thanks for listening to 3CR Spoken Word Show. I'm Indrani Pereira. Thanks for joining me today, Lynette, Natasha.
Oh, thank you so much for having me and for having these conversations. And I hope, if anything, these poems, you know, give someone that feeling of being less alone in this world.
I'm sure that they will. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in.
And remember to tune in to Spoken Word every Thursday at 9 a.m. here on 3CR for more Spoken Word goodness.